Hello, Portland Trailblazers fans, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Blazers Edge podcast. My name is Dave Deckard. I'm the managing editor at Blazers Edge, and we are, as always, absolutely thrilled to be here with you. Whether you're finding us through iTunes, Stitcher, directly, however you're doing it, keep on doing it throughout the summer. We are going to be here giving you your Portland Trailblazers fix when everybody else disappears and you're jonesing for information. We have got it right here. And join us, become part of the family, invite friends to do so too. I am here, as always, with my co-host, Dan Morang. Dan, how are you doing today?
Not too bad, Dave. It's a beautiful day outside, but it's an even better day to be able to talk basketball, so thank you for that.
Every day is a good day to talk basketball.
This is very true.
Huddled up in our mom's basements is the stereotype. Talking basketball. That's why we get there first. Anyway, today we are going to talk about a subject that's sensitive to Trailblazer fans. We already broached it this morning on site, which is CJ McCollum. And you have opined before, and I agree with you, that if the Blazers are going to make a major trade this summer, that CJ is going to almost have to be at the center of that, because he's the one guy they've got who's dispensable, has an enormous amount of talent, and whose contract is reasonable. So we're going to take a look at the prospects there. But before we talk about even possibly trading away the guy, let's talk about him himself, his assets, his drawbacks, and why the Blazers might think about moving him. Let's start with the good stuff. What do you think CJ brings to this team that that really helps? Why do we love him?
I mean, what CJ is he's a more efficient version of Dame, and that's a really 30,000 foot level version of him that I think some people would go, well, he's not Damian Lillard. I'm not saying he's Damian Lillard. I'm saying he brings a lot of the same things to the table. He's a pick and roll guard. He's a knockdown jump shooter, and he can create his own shot off the dribble. And that's those. There's a lot of minutia in that that you can break down, but I think that that's when you talk about his quote-unquote expendability, it's because of that redundancy. And the arguments can be made either way about whether redundancy is a good thing or a bad thing, but I think that that's the first talking point is that you can get to when you talk about CJ and Damian, is that while both excellent, there's some redundancy there.
You know, some have compared CJ to a modern day, slightly shorter, probably slightly quicker Brandon Roy in his offense anyway, in his ability to go either way, score from the mid-range, still hit the long ball. Do you see validity in that?
Absolutely. The one capacity I think that you can make a direct link to Brandon Roy, and there's not many people in the league that can say this, is their dribble move. In CJ in particular, his hesitation dribble. I've talked to a lot of guys around the league talking about, you know, who has the best handle in the league. And typically you hear Kyrie Irving is the guy that has the tightest handle in the league right now. Lightning quick crossover. Steph usually gets ranked up there pretty well. But CJ's number and his name comes up time and time again. And it's based off one move. It's his hesitation crossover. That move is the move that leads to all others. It creates space for him. It allows him to get through the defense. He can turn it into a hesitation step back. He can turn it into a hesitation crossover to take it to the rim. The step back turns into a fadeaway mid-range. That's really the key that unlocks defenses for him on the dribble. And he can turn it a couple different ways.
And how many times did you see CJ this season split defenders on a screen? And that had been absent from Portland's offense for a long time, but it's partly by choice because, for instance, with LaMarcus Aldridge centered offense, you don't want necessarily guys handling the ball that much, let alone taking it down the middle when LaMarcus is sitting there just off to the side with the defender ready for you to set him up in the extended post. But it was delightful to see both guards be able to come off a screen, which of course is the premier play in the NBA right now, and essentially foil opposing defensive schemes simply by cutting right down the middle, making a quick left turn, and there you go. All of a sudden they're past it.
Yeah, you know, it's the counter to the counter, and that's what takes somebody who's a good player to a great or elite player. And while CJ's not quite elite yet, he's shown potential to possibly be that. And that's where you get that counter argument for not trading CJ. And that's part of the positive is that CJ, I think, still has a ton of potential, but I don't think it's quite as high as others may seem to think it is. But that one move in particular, being able to split that defense, that almost came out as a necessity, and that shows that CJ's able to grow and adapt in a very, not combative, but very competitive environment where a defense is being targeted at him, and yet he's able to counter that. And that shows, that's the difference between I know this is an extreme example, but it works with what we've seen recently, Mason Plumlee being left all alone and able to create the offense, but when the defense doesn't crowd him, like in the Golden State series, and all of a sudden he can't hit a shot, what's the adjustment that he makes? And he wasn't able to make that adjustment to be successful. When they trap hard on CJ, CJ's got that counter, and that from time to time he can split that defense. And that's one of those elite level skills that comes across that makes you want to keep the guy.
Well, and here's the follow-up to that is that, and you've hit on it squarely, I think, that when you have a guy who is able to score from multiple ranges with two or three bankable approaches, okay, you can run the offense through him without necessarily setting the offense around his style. Now, granted that the Blazers adjusted to make the guards more prominent this year, okay, I'm not saying that they didn't make any adjustments, but you contrast that with, say, Aldridge, and Aldridge is clearly the superior player, okay, there's no argument in my mind there, no. Right now anyway, but in order to make LaMarcus effective, even though he had some skills in his trunk there, you had to basically do two or three things that were in his wheelhouse and that he was most comfortable with, and you designed the whole offense around that, and it worked. But CJ is like a chaser to the drink. I mean, he's like an add-on that you can get production out of him without necessarily limiting the offense to just what he does. Now you can have another guy who's kind of like LaMarcus, maybe not quite so sturdy in the central role, but still that is able to do two or three things also. And there's synergy between them instead of the either or.
Yeah, I think you've really nailed that. In that, there's another facet to that. And CJ's also a playmaker, and not by playmaker, I don't just mean passer, but the ability to put the ball down on the floor. We've talked about his hesitation dribble and his dribble escape moves and things of that nature. But the difference between CJ and LaMarcus, I mean, other than being vastly different players, is that one can put the ball on the floor and create for themselves. The other one can put the ball on the floor and create for themselves and others. And even LaMarcus struggles to create the play for himself unless he's creating in the post. So that multifaceted ability of McCollum is what makes him so valuable in today's NBA. Now,
filthy. He's filthy. I mean, there were some times this season that he would just, these dribble moves, you were going, what the? You had to rewind that thing.
Dirk in the corner. When he turned Dirk literally in a circle, and I mean, Dirk's not an all-world defender, but when you have a top 20 NBA all-time player look at you and laugh because you just made him look that stupid, that says something right there. CJ has it, and I'll say this preemptively. I don't think, you know, get the hot take Evan Mitz out. I don't think CJ's ceiling will ever be hit playing alongside Damian Lillard.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. One more thing before we hit that. Let's get right there, except I want to say one thing about the ceiling thing since you brought it up. As impressive to me as the ceiling potential is the fact that his floor is going to be high. You get a lot of guys in this league with a lot of talent, but there's also a lot of variance, and you're just not sure when they're young how the baseline production is going to go.
The shake rating. Shake rating.
Yay, man. But every time I go to Dairy Queen, I think of that. Anyway, we we don't know, right? And you know there's a possibility that, that they're going to be really great one game in three, but really your NBA career is not determined by one game in three unless it's in the playoffs. It's determined by what you do every night. Now, CJ, you can tell by his approach on the floor, you can tell by his demeanor, by his analysis that he makes public, by the way he conducts himself.
He's a student of the game.
Yeah, exactly. I don't mean that he's pleasing. Okay, I think that's dangerous territory. I don't care whether an athlete makes me happy or not. I care how he plays. But CJ, the cerebral approach to the game and the reasoned approach to life makes you think that this guy is not going to bottom out. Okay, this guy, whatever he's going to be, he's going to maintain some consistency. And that, more than anything else, I hate to lose, because you're looking at something that can last a decade, 15 years, not just a couple good years in your prime, but a career. This guy is going to be an asset for the franchise he's on.
Yeah, and that's a perfect way to. And I've talked about this before when profiling the differences between Lillard and McCollum, is that volatility. Lillard has the capacity to drop 50, but he also has the capacity to miss 20 shots on a night. The peaks and valleys for Lillard are much more pronounced than they are for McCollum. Granted, I think McCollum's highest scoring output was his first game of the season, correct? 37? Did he break 37 night?
He went big. I mean, he went big a couple times, but yeah, it's safe to say that was huge.
I'm almost certain that was the highest scoring output of the season for him. And it was a phenomenal game, but he only had 3 or 4 quote-unquote bad games. He's going to give you 20 points, 3 boards, 4 assists every single night. And that's as a secondary option. And some people argue that, well, he's a primary with a secondary unit, but I'm telling you, if he was giving the amount of touches, the amount of shots, and the amount of opportunities as Damian Lillard, some people would argue that with usage rate, you know, efficiency drops, sure, okay, but he's still going to be more efficient than Damian Lillard.
Yeah, and now we can drift into the interesting chemistry, the can they play together, and the negatives of CJ. And I think there are a couple negatives about McCollum's game. Defense is still one of them. I think he was better this year, obviously. And
it's not for lack of trying. It's right, just he's not a great defender.
Well, and not necessarily equipped. I mean, yes, the league is going more to two point guards rather than point guard shooting guard. The 6'7" shooting guard is an artifact of the past in most cases. Okay. Yeah. James Harden and et cetera at side, but you know, it's the whole league is going two point guards, but those, a lot of those point guards are hyper athletic, which, you know, it kind of bothers CJ, like on the offensive end, but defensively it's really a problem, right? Because the guys can get past him, or you know, quick twitch and shoot, or just kind of body him out of the way when they want to. Now, the regular season, this doesn't always come out, but you can tell when there's a play where they need a
playoff
stop.
Imagination, you can see it.
Yeah, it's visible. Exactly. So, I mean, defense is part of it. Redundancy is part of it. I mean, you brought that up. And it's not that that's an inherent flaw in CJ. It's that Lillard is also not that defender. So we put them together. It's
if
a little bit
either
toxic.
One of those guys were a defender, were a plus defender, well, I'm not even talking Chris Paul level defender. I'm talking George Hill. I'm talking just a plus defender. This could be workable. But the fact that they're both turnstiles defensively, it can't work. I don't care if you put Dikembe Mutombo behind them. It doesn't. It just doesn't work. It's not a thing, and it's a bummer because I wish it were. But the only way I think that you could actually make this work is if this team had Shaq and you could slow the pace of a game down and you could throw the ball down to a big guy that could eat up 25 possessions a game where you're getting super efficient scoring the entire night. And yeah, you're getting elite level defense on the other end from that same position. But that doesn't exist in today's NBA.
Well, and the other problem with the synergy thing is even on offense, okay, there is some synergy, but this is not Terry Porter throwing up an alley-oop to Clyde Drexler, okay? Their synergy comes in, I think, their personal chemistry together and their professional chemistry, in that neither one has so much ego that they won't get out of the way for the other.
No, when they know each other is on, yeah, they feed the other one. There's more than just a working relationship. It's a professional and a personal relationship that those two have bonded on clearly. And it's one of those things where everybody talks about locker room and the bonding and all that kind of stuff, and it kind of gets kicked to the side. That shows out on the court with those two guys. Clearly, when one of them is riding that hot streak, they feed each other all day long. And that's great. But CJ's not, like, you want to talk about Terry and Clyde. This isn't even Rondo and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce. I mean, the redundancy in their play style, neither, as much as CJ runs off ball, and he does. I think he finished second or third in the league in total distance covered on a nightly basis offensively. So this guy runs around the floor like Ray Allen, but he doesn't play like Ray Allen, where he's being set up in a nature to just catch and shoot and knock down shots. And they have to have the ball in there. They both have to have the ball in their hand. And that's another one of those negatives that...
Yeah, they're getting out of the way. They're getting out of the way of each other, which is fantastic. But that's not ideal. And if you look at it, they both scored regularly. I mean, but they both top 20 points. But the nights when they both did so efficiently were kind of rare, right? So you get 20 points, but it's because one of them was really on and got to take a lot of shots, and the other one went 7 for 20. 20 or whatever it was, right? And that's a function of the setup of the team around them. There, nobody else in the front court is taking shots, so all those shots are available. If you get better and you need more efficiency and the kind of an offense that really, where the two work together to create offense for each other and the rest of the lineup, as opposed to just moving out of the other way and ceding the floor to their partner there, then I think that has not been proven, and I think that will be more of an issue.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons, one of the things I was actually talking about the other day was that as much as CJ and Dame are pick and roll players, and as much as they ran the pick and roll, who are they running pick and rolls with?
Yeah.
I mean, let me think about that for a second, is that they're running them over and over again with Mason Plumlee for the majority of the game in the season. And Leonard, who actually, if you look at the numbers between McCollum and Leonard, the pick and roll and pick and pop, it was one of the more efficient two-man pick and roll combos in the entire NBA. So when he had a chance to work with somebody who offered something on the offensive end other than passing, CJ's efficiency went through the roof. Damian, same thing. But again, you're talking about getting out of each other's way as opposed to working together in a synergistic fashion, if that makes sense.
And going off topic for just a minute, even with that pick and roll, if you're talking about rolling, the sign that you have arrived is when the alley-oop becomes not a regular part of the offense, because it never is. That's a rare play. But when that threat is omnipresent, okay, when you think this could turn into a dunk, right? Mm-hmm. That never happened with Portland's front court this year. And by the way, Mason Plumlee is a fine athlete and can dunk the heck out of the ball. And also,
I think he was fourth in the league in dunks this year.
Yeah, Myers Leonard is not terrible either, but that whole pick and roll. I mean, you remember Andre Miller who was it?
Professor Lobb.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but also, Rasheed Wallace was a constant threat. Like he was gonna dunk. Sometimes it's off the screen. Sometimes it's just down the sideline. But it's not just how athletic you are, it's not just having the capacity, it's having the players to make enough of a threat on both sides of that play that you can cause the defense to shift and you get an easy shot either way you go. The Blazers need a different front court to make that happen because it just was not happening.
There's another thing to this, and this is not something I've been coy about. Lillard is the worst lob passer in the NBA.
Yeah.
it's not even close. And we've been spoiled in Portland with lob passers over the past couple of years. love or hate, actually, I mean, for the most part, everybody hated Sebastian Telfair. Telfair threw a lob better than most people in the NBA realized. Andre Miller may be the best lob passer of all time.
It's Andre Miller to everybody.
Yeah, Andre Miller may be the best lob passer of all time. And, and it's a very underrated skill set, but when you see it and you see how good it is, I remember succinctly Andre Miller lobbing from 50 feet pinpoint to a backdoor cut, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, how did he... Number one, how did he see it? Number two, how did he do it? And it was incredible. And that's something that I think that Dame and CJ could both learn to do and grow from and add to their game. But I don't know if it... Do you build up that reputation with those players when you're working as the primary or secondary? I mean, I don't know. It's a weird dynamic. I think that gets built up over time when you're the constant primary ball handler. And I don't know if either one of them can ever really get that sense when they're taking turns. Does that make sense?
Exactly. And there needs to come some consistency and reliability, knowing who it's going to be and what they're supposed to do. And they've got the variation, they've got the options, but I think there's a possibility to have some of those options with a different type of player at shooting guard, for instance, and retain enough of the variety to where you don't have so much options and so little, bankable finishing power. I mean, look at both of them finishing in the lane, for instance. They're not bad, okay? They're not. They can get layup up, but it's not like a huge threat most games and most possessions. You know that they're not going to go there, and both of them are the same that way in that it's not their favorite play. So you've got a couple of guys trying to go around the defense, trying to slip something through. Could you have one guy doing that and another guy bringing thunderous power to get the defense weak in the knees and attack two different ways instead of just one twice?
Yeah, this isn't Russell Westbrook going to the middle of the lane looking to assault the rim. No. I mean, that just doesn't happen. I mean, CJ had like, what, four or five dunks the entire season?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we saw Lillard's dunks drop way off this season too. So that could be part of it as well, the paint not being open, and that kind of leads to the communication and the reputation that you build with each other, the backcourt and the front court. So I don't know, but honestly, I think when we get back to it, the bottom line is that if the Blazers are going to make a big move and get to that next level, CJ's the one that's got to be traded.
Exactly. So let's get to those trades. But before we do, really quick, how much do you love CJ, scale of 1 to 10 individually? I mean, 10 is like all world, never touch him. He's the deity of the Portland Trailblazers. So where are you?
Honestly, I'm about an 8. I love him. I really do. And people think because I say that he's the one that needs to be traded, that I don't like him or I don't love him. I love him. I think as he's leading his own team, he could be an all-star. No problem. I mean, if you were to put him up against, and that's as a point guard, I think he could be a point guard in this league. If you put the right team around him, he could be a very, very good point guard in this league, much the same way that Damian Lillard is. So, but Lillard's locked in now at a max contract. Lillard is buried now in Portland lore. You cannot, no matter what you want to do, Neil Olshey cannot trade Damian Lillard. It's not a viable possibility. I mean, barring a street fight with, 13-year-old kids, he is not going to have enough negativity associated with him to be able to move him.
Are you kidding? They'd blame the kids. I hate that way of thinking because I'd move Lillard for the right deal because CJ exists.
I would too, but in the real world.
Yeah, no, I get it. In the real world. And in the real world, I don't think they even move CJ because, he's a feather in Olshey's cap. Great draft pick, turning out well. I give him an 8.5 even. I throw in the 0.5 because of the demeanor and the fact that he's going to be your team's color commentator for the next 40 years. Yeah. If he doesn't go national, it's like, there's nothing wrong with this guy, period. And if he weren't playing alongside Lillard, you'd go, this guy is a perfect fit anywhere. So,
yeah, I mean, you could plug and play him on almost any team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd they wouldn't miss a beat.
He reminds me a lot in terms of variety, and he doesn't quite have the body, but he's a little like what I thought of Jarrett Jack, just with three times the skills and, you know, 1.75 times the scoring production. He's like if Jarrett Jack were a star. It's like what they thought Jarrett Jack
was going to be. Yeah. No, that's actually a great comparison, because I always thought JJ was a player that, and you see it later in his career. Everywhere he's ever been, he's been successful.
Mm-hmm.
And every team and every coach, it's always nothing but, no, JJ's he's a pro's pro.
Yeah. Brings me back to the fan shots. I'd rather have Martell Webster and Jarrett Jack than Chris Paul anyway.
Oh, God. No. Let's not go there.
Come on.
Let's not bring that one up.
You can't. You have trades.
Well, I mean, if we're going to trade, we got to talk about how we can trade for Chris Paul, right? That's right.
Exactly. All right. So what you got? If we've discussed CJ to death now. We know how we feel about him, who he is. What potential trades?
What's his value? Yeah. All right. So, obviously, unless you've been under a rock, you know that the Philadelphia 76ers are shopping both Jahlil Okafor and Nerlens Noel. Personally, I'm a Nerlens Noel guy, but I don't think that they, unless they are willing to give up Noel, Covington, and the Lakers pick, that CJ's worth more than that to me. Noel has had some injury issues. He's due for a contract at the same time, and he's going to want near or at max money. And I don't know if he's quite worth that yet, because he missed that first year. If you're going to deal with the 76ers, I think you go the way of Okafor.
And they're not going to sell Noel cheap. They're going to sell Okafor cheap.
Cheaper. Yeah.
You know, that they're willing to get rid of him.
Yeah, it's because it's the lack of redundancy that we're trying to eliminate.
Yeah, or the abundance of redundancy.
Abundance of redundancy.
Hey, yeah, that's a great band name. Anyway, we will, the Blazers, I think, could make hay with Okafor.
I go back and forth with Okafor. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think Okafor for CJ, again, and the people, again, call me crazy, is enough for CJ. Okafor has a lot of, you know, black marks on his record right now as the guy that didn't fight a 13-year-old but fought an 18-year-old in the street after a game.
Yeah, of course he is 18 or something. Yeah. So he's only 20. So
20 years old.
You
got to
skew that a little bit. Yeah,
but I mean that's not a good look. Right. Don't get me wrong, I did way more ridiculous things when I was that age. Mm. But I think it'd have to be a package centered around Okafor and maybe Covington. Something along those lines would be a good starting point. Covington's a nice player, a pro's pro kind of player on a cheap deal, locked in. I think he's at $1 million for 4 years. So there's some value to be gained there along that line. I'm not totally sold on Okafor, but I tend to think he's more of an Al Jefferson than anything else. But others talk about how he has this elite offensive skill, and Portland saw it.
He
scored,
Remember 18
straight points that he scored?
It was sick. That was bad. It's like, oh, Okafor stinks, and nobody likes Okafor. He's bombing out. Here come the Trailblazers, like, oh, what happened?
And it wasn't like he was just going to one move.
No.
It was right shoulder hook, left shoulder hook, up and under, step through, step back, fade away, 15-foot jumper, and it was just like, oh, poor Mason Plumlee.
He was like the guy where you're playing a video game and you're doing it on, you know, medium level or average. He's like, I'm pretty good at this. I'm going to step up to hard. He was like that guy at the beginning of hard level that shows you that you ain't ready yet, because he's just taken you six different ways from Sunday. So that was impressive.
He had, for a 19-year-old kid, he had more tricks in that bag than
Santa Claus.
Than anybody I've seen in a long, long time. Mm. Garnett didn't come into the league with a post game that ready.
Yeah, that said, he obviously didn't do that every night. He wouldn't be banking on that.
But that's the potential that you're buying.
Mm-hmm. And you know, look, 17.5 points a game on 51% shooting, you know, most of it's happening within 10 feet. But still, that's, even if you discount potential, that's not awful. That's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all. But again, when we're talking about trying to cover up for problems in the on the between the guards, mm-hmm. Okafor's not a good defender. He's got footwork problems defensively, which is crazy when you think about how great his footwork is offensively. He falls asleep on the backside. He's a decent weak side shot blocker, but nothing spectacular. And for a guy at big and that strong, I've heard problems with him and staying in shape and not really dedicating himself fully to basketball. And I just, that's not what you trade CJ McCollum for in my mind. Not unless there's something vastly greater in value coming back.
Yeah, Covington's interesting. I shy away a little bit from another small forward who can't quite shoot, but I mean, it wouldn't be a terrible throw in. But the one that I heard talking to somebody, not anybody official, don't start a rumor, but just people who should know, chewing this over, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Okafor and LA's pick, which is next year.
Top two protected?
Top three protected top three. Next year, I believe, in 2017, and unprotected in 2018. And that's LA as in the Lakers, not the Clippers.
Yeah.
So, look, you've got.
That's doable.
You've got McCollum. You've got that draft pick who, unless they get really good really quick, will probably be a lottery pick. And if the Lakers continue to stink, knock on wood, then that could be a high lottery pick. And also, the other thing that we haven't talked about that our colleague Eric Griffin will just, steam will come out of his ears if we don't, is that Okafor's contract lasts
two more years
longer, yeah, than yep. CJ's, so you don't have to pay him for a couple more years, so you have the potential to move some cap space into the future that you just don't right now. And now maybe you can become active in the 2017 free agent market instead of getting stuck with 2016. At that point, that might make some sense.
Yeah, it really does. And then that's another point that I was going to kind of work my way towards, is that you do get those extra 2 years. In those 2 years, in the time when the cap is exploding more than any time on record, make that more valuable than almost any other deal. Draft picks this year and next year are worth their weight in gold.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything you can do to hold off and stack, I mean, who's to say some team out there doesn't blow it up and doesn't re-sign somebody or trade somebody away, and somebody needs to make space somewhere along the line, and you, again, have the ability to take all that in. And keep in mind, Damian Lillard's still only 25 years old. He's not at his peak yet. It's not like the team needs to be loaded right this second to make it happen.
Okay, so let's look at this then. We'll give you two versions. Okafor without the pick, something like Covington or whatever coming back, or Okafor and the Lakers pick. Thumbs up or thumbs down on those two deals?
With the pick, you could convince me. Without the pick, no.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. We're agreeing too much, but yeah. It's that's exactly it. Throw in that Lakers pick, and all of a sudden I'm
listening
very
your head.
Hard.
Yeah, you start yeah. scratching your head, because unless the Lakers are somehow magical and sign Kevin Durant in the offseason, mm-hmm. I have a very hard time seeing them win more games with Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
I mean, as bad as Kobe was, mm-hmm. He's still a one-and-done rookie from Duke. So mm-hmm. I just – it's a hard one for me to swallow them doing anything better than getting outside the top eight.
Well, and hey, you know, it won't be a top three pick next year, but would you take pick number five? I think the Blazers would, with Okafor, Lillard, and shout out to Chris Lucia now, maybe match Allen Crabbe's free agency offer, right? So now you have Lillard and Crabbe, and you have Okafor, and you have a draft pick coming in, and you have the same forwards that you have now. It's not a bad lineup.
No, and I think that actually makes for entertaining basketball, and it makes for a counter. Is everybody starts to talk about small ball? I try to point this out to anybody who's, small ball's the future of the NBA. Yeah, until you get a big.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get rid of small ball? Get a big that knows what they're doing and feed them over and over again. They'll get out of that small ball lineup real quick. Ask Golden State about that. Oklahoma City's throwing that big lineup at them and beat them to death. If it wasn't for Westbrook and Durant just engaging full-on stupidity in the final 5 minutes of that game, we'd be previewing a Cavs-Thunder final right now. So
yeah. Exactly. You know, in the old days, obviously, and in the old days it was different, but even when they used to run like one-on-one games for fun or three-on-three, guess who dominated? It was seven-footers who could handle the ball, and they'd just destroy you because they were unstoppable. The guards will always miss eventually.
Yeah.
And besides, if you're going small ball, unless Steph Curry gets injured, you're always going to be the second best small ball team in the NBA. But if you can throw a wrinkle in and be the next wave, and keep in mind that small ball is the wrinkle now.
It's relative.
But yeah, I mean, what was the wrinkle? It was San Antonio 5 years ago, right? And they, by the way, made hay for a decade and a half with that. So it's not like this is, you know, now and forever. 5-6 years ago, it may be different. Guess what? 5-6 years from now, you have all these players in their prime. What other trades you got for CJ?
Here's the one that I've actually broached this one before. I think I brought it up when I did my first profile on McCollum back in December, was a CJ to Orlando deal. And this one really interests me, and this is not just because I'm a USC homer, but CJ and Aminu to Orlando for Nick Vucevic, Victor Oladipo, and their first round pick this year.
You know what I hear? I hear that completely independently from someone else who covers their team, I've heard that is not outside the realm of possibility that exact trade would make sense to them too. How do you feel about it?
I honestly love it. Oladipo and Avery Bradley are two players that are ready made to play alongside Damian Lillard. If you want to talk about that 2-point guard lineup where one of them is an absolute defender, there you go. You want to talk about offensive production? Nick Vucevic gives you offensive production. I think that his abilities pair better with Lillard than Okafor's. Okafor has the better post game. Vucevic can step out to the 3-point line already and knock it down. He had a 30-point, 16-rebound game against Portland in Orlando.
Yep, he was huge. Well, check this out. Just some stats on Vucevic. He's shooting 62% within 3 feet, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
But he's shooting 500 between 3 and 10 feet, 43% from 10 to 16, and 48% from 16 to the 3-point arc. He's not a good 3-point shooter, but I mean, who cares?
He can step out though. That's the point.
Yeah. I mean, and by the way, his production is 18.2 points a game and 9 rebounds, which is more than more than Okafor. And the guy is 25. Okay, so it's not like he's outside of your range. He gives you the wrinkle at center that you don't have right now. He or Okafor would both free the Blazers up to make another move with a big man because they wouldn't need all those bigs. If you lose Myers Leonard, it doesn't hurt quite as bad, I think, if you have Vucevic in your lineup. So, you know, there's a lot of arguments that this could be a great deal.
Well, here's the other thing. Vuce is locked in for 4 more years at 13 plus million.
Yep.
If you factor that in with the exploding cap, that's about equal to a guy making about 10 million a year that right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, where's the, just in the straight trade, it's not a terrible deal.
Right.
You throw in Oladipo and they're the 11th pick in this year's draft?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, any qualms about losing Aminu under those circumstances?
No, none.
Yeah, no, that's right.
I'm higher on Aminu probably than a lot of other people. But no, zero qualms about that. That trade to me is one of those trades that's mutually beneficial for both teams.
Yep.
And it's probably such a good trade that it'll never happen.
Yeah, if you lose Aminu, just re-sign Mo Harkless. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, literally, it's a ready-made trade for both teams.
Yeah, I get... It just seems like...
Elfrid Payton and CJ McCollum, Oladipo and Damian Lillard. I mean, the balance in the backcourt already then becomes a thing for them.
Yeah.
They can either start Aminu or they can start Aaron Gordon. Mm-hmm. They go into the market now for a big with a ton of money.
Yeah.
I mean, a guy like Whiteside can move from Miami to Orlando.
Yep.
And they could be an immediate player very quickly. Portland with a starting lineup of Damian, Oladipo, Harkless, insert power forward here in Vucevic. I could go into next season with that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at the NBA draft this year, and it's maybe they target one of the power forwards in the draft with that 11th pick. I know that a guy like Scal will be available at right around that range, that 9 through 12 range.
Mm-hmm.
You go for a veteran free agent and plug and play him for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And see what happens, and then wait for free agency.
Well, and you can get power forwards. That's one position that obviously that position has evolved as much as any in the last 5 years. But the neat thing about it is there's some variety in approaches, and there's a lot of talent among that kind of 6 foot, 9.5 to 6'11" guy where you can go everything from Ed Davis to Zach Randolph to Dirk Nowitzki, really.
What about like a guy like Pau Gasol? Playing Pau alongside Vucevic sounds like a pretty darn good lineup for me, and it sounds like Pau's on the outs in Chicago. So, yep. I mean, a 2-year deal on him. There's a ton of guys that are out there. There's the Terrence Joneses of the world, the Ilyasovas. I mean, there's so many. If you want a guy that's a little more defensive, you could go with a Jordan Hill.
Mm-hmm. Draft pick small forward in that case. And then, you know, you've got actually the seeds of a good lineup. And keep in mind that you don't lose everybody. It depending on how much it would cost to sign Gasol. But you might be able to retain one of your restricted free agents. Or, you know, basically, we already said you had Harkless, but you've still got Mason Plumlee. You've still got Ed Davis. Those guys can either play or fodder for trades. I mean, you've got a lot more options.
You could have a front court that's, you know, for, you know, this circumstance, you could have a Pau Gasol, Vucevic, Ed Davis, Mason Plumlee front court.
Yeah, it's not bad.
That's the best front court the Portland Trailblazers have had since...
Traveling all-star team, probably.
Yeah, Jermaine O'Neal.
That era.
I mean, that's probably the best front court they've had since that time. You can make an argument for a healthy Greg Oden, LaMarcus Aldridge, but other than that...
We never got healthy Greg Oden.
Yes,
so,
that's the thing. Yeah. It's that. So, and your backcourt, if you sign Crabb, a three-man rotation, because remember, Oladipo can play some of that point guard.
Mm-hmm.
Lillard, Oladipo, and Crabb?
Yep.
That's doable.
You have to do some cap maneuvering to make all that happen, but you know, you're not horribly far away probably. So, I mean, yeah, there's just like right now it seems like there are a lot of options, but all of them center around one move, which is moving McCollum.
Mm-hmm.
After you've done that, you have a lot more freedom. There are smaller moves.
Your lateral
moves. You can
moves,
adjust a lot of different ways based on skill set, not just needing raw talent.
And that's the thing is that, especially in this deal, you get talent at positional needs in Vucevic at the big, and then you replace you get a replacement level player, actually better than replacement level, in Oladipo, and you get a draft pick.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Two problems with Oladipo. One, 3-point shooting, but that can develop. Two, I mean, the Magic drafted him to be one of those guys with capital T, capital G. You know, it's like they had expectations for him that maybe he's not quite equipped to meet, or at least not yet. But the Blazers don't need him to be that guy. They need him to be the guy he is and improve incrementally for the next, say, 5 years. 28-year-old guy who can defend, maybe a little bit of improved 3-point shot, has his head in the game, can play a couple positions. I mean,
be Portland's Avery Bradley.
Yeah.
Literally what they need him to be is, hey, work on that jump shot, keep playing defense, be a secondary ball handler when we need you to be. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, just be you.
Yep.
Yeah. And that can free a player up. I mean, that can really do a lot for a player. Vucevic gives you everything you really want except for great defense. And I think you can pair him with a defensive player because unlike a guy like a, you know, like a Plumlee or an Ed Davis right now, where they're each one is so one-dimensional, he's so good offensively that you can cover up for some of his weaknesses.
Right. So we're both thumbs up on this one, I imagine.
Yeah, no, this is one that I brought up months ago and people tried to chase me off with pitchforks and torches, but I'll sit by this one, especially with a draft pick in there.
You got plate mail and a fire extinguisher. That trade's not going away if it's offered. So what else you got?
I mean, there's a couple other deals that are out there. There's, you know, that we could broach the possibility of a Greg Monroe. I don't know if you want to touch that one.
Yeah, go for it. I mean, what would you think of? I mean, because that would be closer to a straight up deal, I would think.
You know what? This is where I think you could possibly get the Sixers involved. I think you could do a three-way trade where Okafor ends up in Milwaukee, Monroe ends up in Portland, and CJ ends up in Philly. Now, I don't think it would be a straight trade. I think Portland would want to get Henson in the deal too, and that would probably be the deal breaker.
Okay.
If they wanted Monroe, I think they'd want a player like Henson to play alongside him. To be that defensive presence, to be that shot blocker, rebounder, to be that defensive anchor. The big thing is there is I believe Henson has a poison pill contract provision in his trade in his contract, so that would be a difficult one. It would be a huge kicker, which is kind of a bummer because his contract is so great right now.
I've always kind of liked Henson. I mean, secretly, he's a neat guy. He's a defensive guy who can also he won't embarrass you if you give him the ball, right? Which is not exactly rare, but the Blazers don't need more one-dimensional players, honestly. And he's got several. I mean, he can do something with the ball out to 15 feet.
No, he's got a jump shot and he's got a little baby hook. He's got a little running hook. Yeah. He's got some offensive game. There's no doubt about that. What makes him really special is his unique athleticism and wingspan. Mm-hmm. He runs the court like a deer.
Yeah.
I mean, that covers up a lot of defensive woes when you have a guy who's 6'11", 7 foot tall with a 7'5" wingspan who gets back in transition and takes away your transition opportunities or pins them to the backboard.
Now, Greg Monroe, though, he's an interesting case because the Blazers did chase him last summer.
And that's
did
what
not
leads me to him.
Get him, right? And they have a history. Paul Allenstein's have a history of, like, long, you know, attention span.
On Chris Paul.
Player. Yeah, exactly. You know, and the thing is, too, that the perception of the year Greg Monroe had in Milwaukee is worse than the year Greg Monroe actually had in Milwaukee. Because I think the perception is that he was going to come in there and, again, be a revolutionary player. He wasn't, but he actually did pretty well.
He put up good numbers. The problem was that defense fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
I personally don't know why that defense fell apart. It doesn't make sense on paper when you have Antetokounmpo, John Henson, just those two guys in the court who can reach from sideline to sideline.
Yeah.
Like that Jabari Parker, who's a very heady basketball player and has a very high basketball IQ. Say what you want about MCW on the offensive side of the end, but he's a 6'7" point guard who one time was considered a prospective all-defensive player. So why that team fell apart defensively? I don't know. Can you blame that on Greg Monroe?
Kind of. It's not entirely his fault. It's not an internal issue. He just fits with that team like a brick fits with a lemon meringue pie. I mean, it just they don't go
together. Is that a shot at meringue?
No, no, not at all. It's very sweet and fluffy. But in any case, you know, you could see why they wanted to take the chance on
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It was a good deal, but Monroe just plays a different style than you get Yanni, you get MCW, you want to run, you want to be mobile, you want a lightning quick attack and a blitz defense and all this. And this is like, I mean, Greg Monroe is not those things.
He's not a plotter, but he's not going to run the floor all night long.
Right.
And here's the thing with Terry Stotts' offense. Everyone gives him credit for really revolutionizing the Blazers' offense and how he was telling the team to push the pace all the time. But if you look at the Blazers' pace, I don't think Damian Lillard really likes to play at a super high pace.
No. And he likes control. He likes Lillard fares best when he's in control of what's going on in that offense, where he certainly his quickness is an asset, but you can tell when Dame feels like he's on top of things, because that step back three and he's like, yeah, I got you, you're on the yo-yo right now, and boom, there's 3 points, as opposed to when he's playing fast and you could tell when he's rushing it, his form falls apart. Mm-hmm. He's not seeing the floor.
And that's where I think maybe a player like a Greg Monroe or a Vucevic or an Okafor makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because none of those guys is really going to run.
Right.
They're all going to be traditional NBA bigs where, yeah, they may have range and they may work in the pick and pop game, but they're going to demand possessions down low. They're going to grind the game out a bit and they're going to slow things down. So pairing Lillard with a player like that probably isn't the worst. I mean, we've seen how it worked with Aldridge.
All right, so thumbs up or thumbs down on Greg Monroe. Let's say we'll give you Henson as well.
If Henson's in the deal, you've got my attention. That's the tipping point. If Henson's in that deal and the most that the Blazers have to give up is CJ and a Minu or a Davis or a Plumlee or something along those lines, and then you know what? You've twisted my arm.
Yeah, I'm going to thumbs down this one. I don't trust Monroe enough. I don't think he's a bad player, but I don't think he's going to do enough. And I think he got one shot. And I know people are going to say, well, Monroe's a bigger name than Vooch is, or, you know, he's more bankable than Okafor is. And you're right on both of those, but I see better synergy. And Monroe's a guy that I kind of like, but I also kind of like to stay away from. He's the guy you set up with your friend, not the guy you take out yourself.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can see it, and I guess I'm more sold on the Henson aspect of it than I am the Monroe aspect of it, and that's what's, if you're talking about anybody else on that team other than Giannis, no, the answer's no.
Sure.
But Henson's that guy because he's on such a great deal for 4 more years, you're taking care of two huge needs right out of the gate, where you've got guys now locked up, you still have cap space, you can pursue perimeter wing players to fill out your roster, which are easier to fill out than bigs. I can be talked into it. Everybody's like, oh yeah, Dan just wants to trade CJ for whoever. No, it's a little more than that, but it's one of those ones where I'm not, if you held me to the fire on this trade, I'd probably say no. But it's one of those ones where if Henson's in the deal, you could talk me into it.
You got to say yes, because I said no. We got to disagree on something. All right, yeah, you're quickly. You got one more? Anything else in the hopper?
There's a couple other ones that are out there, but I don't know how many of them really make sense. The one that I always want to go back to is the Paul George deal.
Oh,
and
I just sat up straighter in my chair.
Yeah, you know, that's the one that could they be on the verge of blowing that team up?
How do you get him?
With Vogel gone, I have no idea what they're going to do with that team.
Mm-hmm.
So CJ has to be in the deal.
Right.
I would imagine they'd want one of the value players in there as well. So either Ed Davis or Aminu.
I'm still listening.
And in the 2018 first round pick.
Okay.
Because that one's dealable.
All right.
If Indiana's going to blow that team up, Paul George is their centerpiece, and you get McCollum, a couple young players on good value contracts, and a first-round pick. That's pretty decent value. But here's the kicker. Portland has the capacity to take back Monta Ellis's deal.
Mm.
And there's not many teams that can offer up assets and have the capacity to take on Monta Ellis's deal. Now, that would be an immediate reset for the Indiana Pacers. They'd have more cap space than anybody else in the league, hands down. They'd have McCollum still for one more year. They'd have two guys locked up on value deals, and they'd have a first-round pick. They wouldn't have much else to work with, but they'd have the capacity to really do whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah, I'd be concerned if I were Indiana, because I'm not sure that they cap space would be as valuable. But, you know, if they had, if they knew they could, they had a bead on somebody and could use it,
yeah,
I can maybe see them going, it seems a little more speculative that they do that. Do you think you could tie in, could, is there some machination where Philly gives them more, or
that was
like that?
That was one lateral move that I saw. I don't know how much a Monte Ellis, George Hill package would interest Philly. I think both those guys are probably past what they would want for a player like Paul George. And I think that Philly would want either McCollum or Paul George in that scenario. And I don't think there's any way that deal could work if you work them into that. So,
sure.
But again, this is all hinging on, there's two teams out there that have the capacity to blow things up, and that's Indiana and Memphis. And yeah, Paul George and Marc Gasol are readily available if that happens.
Yeah, George would be the more desirable of the two. I like Gasol's game incredibly well. I mean, okay, Gasol was like 2 years ago. 2 years ago,
we'd be talking,
move.
Yeah. But yeah, now that he's 30, yeah, and that's
too much.
It's,
yeah,
that, exactly. That's why I went with more towards the Paul George one. He's the perfect fit.
If the Blazers could get George for any package centering around McCollum, they'd be lucky. They should do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So, any last thoughts?
You know, the more I think about it, there's other deals to be out there in the right circumstances. We've talked about them before. Do the Clippers blow things up and Blake Griffin's available? Yeah, you have to look at that. Kevin Love? No, I want no part of him. And that's me. I've never been a Kevin Love fan in any way, shape, matter, or form.
Dropping dimes, man. How could you not? Aren't they supposed to be together? That gets you Chris Paul, too, doesn't it? Just get everybody in that stupid commercial.
Just get in it. You know what? That commercial would probably be a pretty decent team. You know, Garnett just kind of dragging himself out there on the court.
Don't have to worry about the no-good Clippers anymore.
No, this is very true. But, you know.
Okay, one deal of the ones we've discussed. You all of them are available except for George. Let's take that one out of the equation. Of all the other ones, which one do you pick?
Orlando.
Yeah,
without even missing a beat, it's Orlando. It's one I've brought up before in the past. It's one that I've sat there and just kind of, God, it just makes too much sense for both teams.
Yeah, I'd probably go for that one too. I mean, I like that idea of the Lakers pick, though. I mean, it's tempting. Ping pong balls, coin flipping.
Yeah, that's.
But yeah.
How lucky have the Blazers been rolling the dice?
When they've gotten the picks, Neil Olshay's been brilliant. That's
this is
the thing.
True.
It's like if you can get there, then Olshay's going to take you through that high.
Think about
pick.
What he's done with picks in that 11th pick this year in the draft. What if Skal Labissiere turns into that guy?
Yeah.
That's a tough one to look at. I mean, there's a lot more than Scal at that pick, but I'm just saying if you wanted to fill out the roster, you could do it with that pick. And God, you've got a lot of talent then locked up for quite a while on good terms, and you still have space. It's hard to find that anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, the cap space of the Philly deal would be tempting too, but then I'd be arguing against myself because Olshay does as much with cap space as my 5-year-old does with a vacuum cleaner. Like, just going to sit in the corner. I'll go Orlando with you, but I'm sorely tempted by Philly. We got to wrap it up. We've impinged upon your patience long enough, listeners. We hope you'll join us again next week when we will discuss these and other matters. Never a dull moment around here. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you check out the weekend version with Chris Lucia and Brandon Golder. And this is it for the Blazers Edge podcast. God bless and go Blazers.